The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is May 9th, 2016, as we stream to you live here on blacktalkradionetwork.com. Make sure that you subscribe to the website and never miss notifications of upcoming programming. All right, today is just going to be an hour or so of news information and, of course, social political commentary. I got a couple of things that I want to share with you. One of the things I want to start doing more of, I know that this is a program and has been for, since 2008, focusing on, you know, social political issues, issues of global racism. And focusing on it, you know, from a global perspective. But, you know, one of the things when I founded the Black Talk Media Project, which manages the Black Talk Radio Network, one of the things that I wanted to encourage is for media producers, particularly those who are engaging in internet radio, to provide more localized programming, local, you know, if not to the particular city or community that they live in, at least, you know, report on the state issues. That's why so many of us live in areas where things are going on, and unless the corporate media takes an interest in reporting it, then we don't even know what's going on in our own backyard. So on Mondays and perhaps throughout the week, I'm going to try to incorporate more local news here on Black Talk Radio News, which we are in the state of North Carolina. I know we do have a number of listeners here in the state of North Carolina, as well as some associates we have worked with here in North Carolina. But I want to try to do that a little bit more with this particular program that I host and produce, Black Talk Radio News, is to bring my North Carolina listeners more of the information that I think is pertinent to our existence in this state and understanding what is going on where we live on a more micro level. All right, but before I get into today's show, remember the Black Talk Media Project is engaged in creating independent black media for the masses, has done so since 2008, not just creating radio stations and help creating this radio station that we broadcast on and have been broadcasting Black Talk Radio since 2008, but the mission is also to help others to create their own digital radio stations, whether or not they are building websites. That's one of the new services that we provide is WordPress website hosting. And so in order to do more of what we are called to do, and that is to rebuild independent black media that has been strategically and purposely taken away from us and undermined and whatnot. So in order to, you know, fund those efforts, we do appreciate contributions. Again, we are a state North Carolina nonprofit. We are registered with the state. You need to check with your tax preparer if you live outside of the state of North Carolina to see if you can count any of your contributions to the Black Talk Media Project as tax deductible. But we are a state registered nonprofit. One of the things, recent things we started doing is running the crowdfund black media campaign. This is going to be an ongoing campaign, and we hope to grow the budget as large as possible so that we can do more in individual communities and making those individual communities more connected into a collective. But first and foremost, it's all about supporting, producing, and pushing independent black media, because if we don't have control of our sources of information, our sources of news, well, you know, we're prime targets for disinformation. You know, we're not going to be fully informed about the very things that's going around us. Laws get passed, we don't know anything about them until one of our family members or ourselves get arrested, or, you know, business rules get passed and, you know, now you don't know about these new laws and now your business is in violation of these new laws. So, I mean, you know, we have to pay attention to these people that are called politicians who control the state legislature. And I'm going to be talking about a couple of those stories briefly here from North Carolina. One of them is a good news story. I want to talk about a football player by the name of Charles Johnson, plays for the Carolina Panthers, which is a professional National Football League, NFL team, because I don't think that these athletes get the recognition that they're due for the ways that they try to help people who need the most help, is the best way to put it. There's a lot of people that's hurting out there, especially since the 2008 crash, you know, with the everything that led up to that, especially among black people. A lot of housing, you know, was lost, where we're talking about home ownership. But even if we're talking about renting, finding affordable rent in some areas is very challenging. And we live in a country that is not it's not friendly. It's not friendly to its citizens that are less fortunate than others. You know, they want to talk about being a benevolent society founded on the Bible, and you know, but I mean, the things that occur in this country that says it has so much wealth, well, that depends upon your definition of wealth. But, you know, for so many people to be suffering, and I think it is important to recognize, you know, anyone who put forth an effort, no matter how large or how small, to address the issue of those people among us who need the most help. And Charles Johnson was an example of that this week, as he sees something that he has been working on for the past couple of years come to fruition. So I want to share that story with you. Also, you know, this HB2 bill, people calling it the bathroom bill here out of North Carolina, you know, that has made, I would say, international news. People know about the Republicans in North Carolina passing this law. They know about the governor, or maybe they don't know about that, but the governor setting up a hotline for people to call the police to report males who may classify themselves as transgendered and have taken on a female persona. If you see one of them using a bathroom, or if you think somebody looks transgender, I mean, I've seen some straight up biological females who have had male characteristics, you know. You know, there are certain women in my family, especially when they get older, they have facial hair. And somebody could mistake that, you know, not a whole lot. They don't have no mustache and no beard, you know, no bearded ladies or anything like that. But, you know, one of my cousins, she's like in her maybe 50s. She's got what they call, like, you know, what do we call it when a young adolescent male, peach fuzz? She got peach fuzz for a mustache. And I mean, you know, somebody could say, oh, look at that peach fuzz, and you must be a man, and call the police, call the hotline the governor set up, you know, to report people. I mean, it's all just a bunch of nonsense, as, you know, there hasn't really been any issues in the past. It was only when the city of Charlotte sought to provide these people with protections, which I'm not fully understanding why they did that, because I'm not really aware of any cases where transgender people were prevented from using their bathroom of choice. So, you know, Charlotte, I don't know why they did that, but that was the Republican response, was then to pass a state law during a special legislative session, pass a state law. And it not only deals with the bathroom, though, you know, it also has to do with age discrimination, race discrimination, you know, and just making it even easier for businesses, corporations, employers, if you will, to practice discrimination in their employment practices. Also makes it more difficult for a victim of discrimination, employment discrimination, or ageism, or whatever you call it, makes it more difficult for them to use the North Carolina courts to seek justice on that issue. So there's a whole lot of things wrong with HB2, but everybody wants to focus on the bathroom issue and not, you know, speak on the other part of it. But anyway, you recently had Michael Jordan, who, anybody who has followed the career of Michael Jordan, who is perhaps one of the most famous North Carolinians, went to University of North Carolina to play basketball, won a championship there as a freshman, then declared for the NBA, joined the Chicago Bulls, won 6 championships. And so he's like, you know, one of the most famous, recognizable names out of North Carolina. And for most of his career, political career, I would say not most, his entire political career, this man has purposely been a political atheist. We could also call him a social atheist, you know, social political atheist, because politics control the social aspects of any society that you live in. Again, you know, they pass laws that regulate, you know, social behavior and what have you. And so Michael Jordan has been a political atheist his entire, you know, life, since I've known of the man, coming out since his basketball days. But then, you know, in terms of local politics or state politics, this man is an atheist. He has said in the past that, you know, he didn't want to endorse this black Democrat because Republicans buy shoes too. So he just totally was on a selfish level. He didn't care that Jesse Helms was a bona fide white supremacist who did much harm to not only non-white people here in North Carolina, but on a national level as a senator, a federal, you know, a U.S. senator to the federal government. And, you know, when Michael Jordan was asked to endorse Harvey Gantt, who was a former Charlotte mayor, Jordan talked about his shoes, man. He cared about was selling shoes. Well, he's opening up his mouth now on a social political issue, and of course you probably figured out by now he's talking about the HB2 bill. And he has even threatened to move the Charlotte Hornets out of Charlotte and move it to some other state. So I want to talk about that as well. I've seen some people post some interesting thoughts on social media in terms of this story. Perhaps I'll share some of those points of view with you as well. Also want to do a rewind. Seems that I'm not the only person who contemplates whether a Clinton presidency would be more dangerous to the planet than a Trump presidency. At least one person seems to agree with that assessment, or at least is asking the question, and that's Rania Kalik, who in April wrote, "Is Hillary Clinton more dangerous than Donald Trump?" Take a look at her article, which I believe was published on Electronic Intifada, which focuses a lot on social-political issues in the Middle East, also known as Northern Africa. The last story I want to share with you is, you might have heard this story about black people in Mexico who are, you know, their nationality is Mexican, but they are black people. They identify as black. They are the descendants of enslaved Africans in that part of the world. And they are threatening violence if necessary to be recognized as a separate and distinct group by the Mexican government, with a unique history linked to the African slave trade in South America. It's getting, some people, you know, they say, you know, they've tried everything. They've gone the legal route. There are financial, economic issues tied to being recognized as Afro-descendant people in Mexico, and some of the reasoning that has been given as to why the government of Mexico doesn't want to recognize black people in Mexico as a distinct, unique group with a distinct, unique history in Mexico. Some of the reasoning is nothing but more practice of racism and white supremacy. All right, so those are some of the stories. If you would like to comment on any of this, you can give us a call. A couple of ways to get in touch with me here on Black Talk Radio News. The first way is to use the conference line. That telephone number is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Of course, to signal me, just hit *6 and 1. I'll bring you right on air. Also, take advantage of the web-based flash phone to make a free call from anywhere in the world. And you can also hit us up on the studio line. That studio line is 704-951-5030. Again, that's 704-951-5030. The first, before we hit our break at the halfway mark, I just want to give kudos, man, and you know, big respect thrown towards this NFL player who has been in Charlotte for a very long time. Charles Johnson is a Carolina Panthers defensive end. He was born and raised in Georgia, you know, in the country, in a rural area. He has always been focused on helping people in the Charlotte area, as well as going back to his hometown and, you know, trying to provide a safe space and an adequate space for, you know, kids in his hometown, children in his hometown to have safe spaces to play sports and what have you, to exercise and things of that nature. But he really impressed me with his latest venture, you know, because I know during Christmas, him and his wife, they had their own foundation. And, you know, they took people from the homeless shelter and what have you, took them around and, you know, during Christmas season and provided, quote unquote, Christmas to these poor people who are without housing, as millions of people in the United States are without housing. And so, you know, there is that issue here in the United States that, you know, only certain segments of society here in America wants to address. They'll pay lip service to, like, homeless veterans and what have you, or, you know, the homeless population. But really, you know, we don't see in terms of the government doing enough to address these issues in our society, these issues of poverty, these issues of homelessness, and what have you. You know, it's just, I hate to beat a dead horse, so to speak, but, you know, it needs to be drilled home, this 2008 bailout of the banks who were engaged in some shady business practices, and you know, but it was all legal, though. It was all legal. You know, all you got to do is check the past 10-20 years going back to the Clintons and the Republicans working together to deregulate certain sectors of the, you know, financial system here in America. But it led to, you know, the bundling of bad debt with so-called good debt, then resold that. I mean, there's a bunch of criminal fraud going on. It ended up, a lot of people, you know, were giving bad information on buying homes, and, you know, a lot of people ended up homeless at the end of the day, and the American taxpayer found itself out billions of dollars, and nobody was held accountable for this. There was no prosecutions whatsoever of these bankers, and you know, they really were rewarded for their reckless behavior. In the meantime, you know, all these people are homeless in the so-called richest country on the face of the earth. You know, the people that I hear people saying, you know, they would rather live nowhere else, ain't nowhere else better. You know, well, I guess that depends on your perspective or your personal existence in this country. You know, for millions of men, women, children, veterans, mentally ill people, and what have you, it's not so great. It is not so great. And you know, for this country to say that it has all this great material wealth, to ignore these people, it just really speaks to the immorality of the fabric of this nation. But anyway, getting back to, that's why I appreciate these athletes and what they do. And off the field, that doesn't always get a lot of attention. You know, it might get a mention here or mention there, but usually when we're talking about in the black community on black radio, usually when we're talking about these athletes, we're trying to compare them to slaves, even though they're making hundreds of millions of dollars, trying to compare them to slaves and what have you, while ignoring the real slaves, which are being held on the prison plantations and in the jails and whatnot. We want to castigate them for, you know, many negative things. And some of it is rightly so, when we see some of them waste their money on material things and what have you, like bling and you know, just a whole lot of wasteful spending and what have you. But we don't really know that a lot of these brothers, and I suspect sisters, but it's mostly the brothers, because they're the ones that's making all the money in the sports industry, making the majority of the money, I should say, in the sports industry. And you know, they really do. There are a lot of them that really are truly giving back to the community and trying to help people who need help the most. And so, as I mentioned, Charles Johnson, during the Christmas season in December, I remember hearing a local story about him and his wife, you know, taking several families around and buying Christmas for the kids and buying them food and what have you from these homeless shelters and what have you. Well, you know, somebody might would have said, listening to that story, well, what about, you know, helping them find a place to live or something like that? And I'm sure, you know, that's probably who's to say that they're not trying to do that and provide assistance. But this story that I came across yesterday, Charles Johnson, through his foundation, has been working for the past couple of years to provide affordable housing in Columbia, South Carolina. Again, he's from Georgia. He works in Charlotte, North Carolina. He does stuff, you know, in both places. But, you know, Columbia, South Carolina, I think a lot of the football players from the Carolina Panthers, after the heinous racist terrorist attack on Emmanuel Church down there in Columbia, South Carolina, I know a lot of the NFL players from Charlotte specifically were touched by that, and they have been, you know, really reaching out to Columbia. And so one of the ways that Charles Johnson reached out was by building affordable housing. So I'm going to share, you know, a little bit of this article with you. It says low-income families in Columbia are getting an opportunity to access affordable housing with the help of a NFL player. The Village at River's Edge broke ground Wednesday, kicking off construction on a multifamily complex across from the E.E. Taylor Elementary School off River Drive. Affordable housing is not what we build, it's what we finance, said Reginald Barner, managing partner with Chamayer Holdings, LLC, an affordable housing development firm. Barner teamed up with business partner Charles Johnson, Carolina Panthers captain and defensive end, to take on the project. Johnson, a Georgia native, uses his own foundation to offer athletic, recreation, and educational programs to underserved youth population. Johnson said he plans to host some activities for the students at the nearby elementary school. So let me see. The Village at River's Edge also received a $20 million investment from the Bank of America, providing construction financing, while other dollars came from a mix of bonds from America First Tax and federal home funds provided by the South Carolina State Housing Finance and Development Authority. All right, so actually, this is an older article, and this is when they first broke ground. Recently, they opened up the complex. So this is an article that's actually from July 2015. So here we are in May of 2016, and it is open now. It's open. I think it's supposed to provide housing for about 138 families, which is no, you know, small task, again, given the scarcity of affordable housing. So, you know, this is what we need to see more of. We need to see more of this. You know, we need to hear more about it, because we don't understand. We have a lot of criticism for these athletes and what have you, but we don't understand that if not for some of their activities, if not for them leveraging their celebrity, if not them leveraging their personal finances, if them not, so to speak, twisting the arms of banks and other corporate entities to also give back to these communities and what have you, then a whole lot of people that need help would not be getting help. So that's that story. Big shout out to Charles Johnson. Really appreciate your efforts, you know, in the places that you have made your presence felt through your different foundations for people living in poverty. All right, I'm going to take a station identification break, and when I come back, keeping it here in the Carolinas, NBA Hall of Famer and Charlotte Hornets owner Michael Jordan is threatening to move his NBA franchise from Charlotte if North Carolina does not repeal HB2. Now, this is noteworthy to me, not because he's simply threatening to remove this NBA franchise from Charlotte for something the people of Charlotte had nothing to do with, something the employees of the Charlotte Hornets had nothing to do with. What is really interesting to me, this is the first time that I have seen Michael Jordan speak out on any kind of political issue. And it happens to be one that has been highlighted as an issue dealing with transgender people having access to whatever bathroom they choose here in the state of North Carolina, and the state legislator holding a special one-day session to pass this law to make it unlawful for them to choose whatever facility, public facility, they want to use. And now Michael Jordan speaking up. For all this time, you know, he has spent here in North Carolina, again, a native North Carolinian, you know, police brutality, modern day slavery and human trafficking and what have you. Now Michael Jordan opens his mouth. Why? Why is he opening his mouth on this issue and not any of the other issues of racism and white supremacy that have been ongoing, you know, since he grew up here in North Carolina, in Wilmington, North Carolina, which has a long history of racism and you know, white supremacy oppression. So you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. Again, if you have any questions or comment, the conference line is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound, hit *6 and 1 if you would like to comment on air. There's the web-based flash phone, and the studio line is 704-951-5030. We'll be right back.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Jails in America are being privatized, and they are on the stock exchange, and you don't build a hotel unless you expect occupancy. So when they're building prisons, they want to build them, but they're building them for you.
I look around this room and I see nothing but untapped potential. You have potential. You have... Oh my.
But now they've got to create a culture in the community that lends to violence, crime, drugs, guns, prostitution, and it's a steady pipeline to prison. But they're offering you rap deals. Atlantic. You rap, and in your rap there's a beef with another rapper, and you get real, you know, fiery about it, and you're talking about drilling down.
I look around this room and I see nothing but untapped potential. You have potential.
Want to kill your brother. So that's the kind of rap you're doing. And then the radio stations are complicit. Because if you make something clean, they don't want to play it. So when you come to the record executives with something clean, but it's got a good beat, you keeping it real. And keeping it real means keeping it as it is so that it will never change.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast. Just want to thank Sincere Noquari for God Life Beats. Definitely check him out on the web. That's Sincere Noquari. God Life Beats. Providing us with that track with Minister Farrakhan talking about modern day slavery, talking about how they control the minds of the masses through the radio stations. And again, I want to keep stressing that it's why the Black Talk Media Project exists. It was Malcolm X who first really clued me into the power of the media and the enemy's tools of propaganda, and you know how these tools can also be used for good or as a counter to what your enemy is doing. So again, if you haven't contributed to the Black Talk Media Project's crowdfunding Black Media, please consider making a donation today. Donations or contributions of $25 or more will get you a Black Radio Stations Matter appreciation t-shirt. All right, so before, on the other side of the break, I was talking about Michael Jordan, you know, being a political atheist his entire professional career. Again, as I told the story, when he was asked to give an endorsement to Harvey Gantt, who was running for the U.S. Senate to, he was running against one of the most vile racist white supremacist in this state, Jesse Helms. Jordan gave the answer that, you know, I'm more interested in being a capitalist and filling my bank account than I am about social political issues that people are facing here in the state of North Carolina. So count me out. You know, if it ain't got nothing to do with, you know, helping me to accumulate butter biscuits through the purchase of my shoes that, you know, I'm endorsing for Nike and what have you, that is then making the shoes by exploiting other non-white labor halfway around the world and what have you. So, you know, I ain't trying to feel that. But now all of a sudden, you know, Michael Jordan is speaking out. All right. And how he's speaking out is he's threatening to move the NBA franchise Charlotte Hornets from Charlotte to another state. All right. Let me just read a little bit from Associated Press article, which was published on ABC News. NBA legend and Charlotte Hornets owner Michael Jordan held a press conference today announcing his intentions to move the Hornets out of North Carolina if the state does not revoke its controversial HB2 law. With this new law in place, North Carolina currently does not have any anti-discrimination protection in place, something that is vital not just for our fans, but for everyone, Jordan told reporters. We are giving the state of North Carolina 30 days to repeal this law, or they can expect the Charlotte Hornets to play elsewhere. I want to make it clear that neither the Hornets nor I will not stand for this type of intolerance and hate. I mean, those are strong words from a political atheist. A man for his entire lifetime has never commented on one single issue dealing with racism, dealing with terrorism, dealing with white supremacy, dealing with slavery. Nothing. This man said, he didn't even say nothing when the South Carolina flag was being debated and what have you, and whether or not it should be brought down. I don't recall him saying anything. You know, he might have said something, a one-liner or something that I'm not aware of that's possible. But I think if the owner of the NBA Charlotte Hornets, Michael Jordan, said something strong about it, then, you know, it would have been made known. Just like we know the owner of the NFL franchise Carolina Panthers, Mr. Jerry Richardson, banned Confederate flags from the property that his franchise sits on. And he publicly called for that Confederate battle flag to come down. That symbolism of white dominance and racism. He said it needs to come down. All right, he took strong boldly. This is the first time I've heard Michael Jordan, who is a black man, speak out on any kind of issue dealing with just discrimination. Now, some people have commented on this article, you know, on social media where I shared it, and some of them was like, you know, well, the NBA came out as a league and condemned HB2 in the transgender bathroom portion of it and what have you. So, you know, Michael Jordan's part of the NBA league and those are his bosses. So they probably didn't call Jordan in and said, you know, I know you're a political atheist. You never even talked about, you know, that young football player, former football player, about to get married, Jonathan Ferrell, getting viciously gunned down in Charlotte and then being set free, you know, by jurors and what. Well, it was a hung jury, you know. You ain't even say nothing about that. But look, Mike, we got to get you to talk on this. You're going to have to take the lead on this as a member of the NBA family of owners and what have you. And so, you know, that's what somebody had posted on the article when I shared it. And I was like, you know what? That is a very strong possibility. Good observation. Perhaps he didn't want to say anything at all. But, you know, if he wants to continue to move up the ladder as a NBA in the NBA league, maybe one day become the first black commissioner of the NBA, you know, then he gonna have to you know, take orders from what they want him to do. So again, this is totally out of character for Michael Jordan to say anything about any kind of social political issue, to talk about he will not stand for any kind of intolerance or hate. And it took a transgender issue for him to finally speak out, you know, and then doesn't, you know, mention, unless he's talking about any type. Well, he said for this type, so he's talking about one type, but that HB2 bill deals with several different types of intolerance and hate. It makes it, as I stated earlier before the break, it makes it more difficult for North Carolinians to use state courts to prove discrimination in terms of race, in terms of gender, in terms of age. It makes it more difficult for them to use the courts to seek a redress of their grievances against any employers that engage in these type of practices against them. Nobody wants to talk about that portion. So, you know, don't get it twisted. This bill here in North Carolina, HB2, needs to be repealed for all of above. I just find it interesting that Michael Jordan, a political atheist, a black man who has never once, I don't even recall him saying nothing about when Michael Brown was murdered, Freddie Gray was murdered, any of these issues, all these young people out there been buying Jordans probably all their life, grew up asking their parents for Jordans for Christmas and what have you, you know, paying $200 for a pair of shoes that only cost maybe $5 to make in Vietnam or China. Yeah, I know how much them shoes cost. I used to sell them bootlegs. So, yeah, I know. Got them from the same factories where he has his shoes made. And, you know, that was back in one of my periods of trying to survive behind the enemy lines after facing racial discrimination. You know, had to come up with a hustle, keep some money coming in. So anyway, yeah, I find it very interesting that Michael Jordan has some very strong words for intolerance and hate directed towards transgender people here in North Carolina. All right, that's all I got to say on that. I will be continuing to follow this issue. It is a local issue. Again, you know, it's a bill that discriminates against everyone here in North Carolina. You know, it's more sinister than that, as, you know, when you can't, when people can practice employment discrimination, it's really economic discrimination. It's the, you know, the, if you can't support yourself, then what? Well, then you like Scottie Reed, about a decade or so ago, after being wrongfully terminated from his job, doing something illegal like selling bootleg Jordans on the street for $50, you know? And you can't see, you can't get redress, you know, of your grievances or the very real injuries done to you or what have you. So, you know, man, Michael Jordan, man, I just really, I just don't have any respect for him whatsoever. So let me move on. Last week I did a program talking about how Donald Trump is the lesser of evils when it's compared, when you compare him to Hillary Clinton. I came across an article someone shared that was came out in April, so that was prior to me doing my program, and apparently they was thinking along the same lines as I was thinking, as they were contemplating, you know, which one of these people may end up as the CEO of USA Inc., one of the very most powerful positions on the planet, all right, regardless of, you know, their puppet status or what. These people are powerful. All right, there's some very powerful puppets and what have you. All right, so you had this woman by the name of Rania Kalik, who also was asking the same question or contemplating the same thing. I'll share a little bit from that article. I'm going to jump down because she really says it all, and you know how I summed it up. It says, let me share this portion with you. It has become accepted orthodoxy in establishment circles to view Trump as an authoritarian race baiter who would present a major threat to the world if elected in November. While this characterization is certainly well founded, it ignores the fact that Clinton is also dangerous to world stability. And unlike Trump, she has the blood on her hands to prove it. If lesser evilism is the goal, and establishment pundits insist, it remains unclear who the lesser evil is if the choice is limited to Trump or Clinton. And she goes on another section called the Warrior Queen and what have you, Trail of Blood, talking about Clinton's hawkishness goes far beyond inflammatory rhetoric. While serving as Secretary of State, she greenlighted enormous weapon deals to U.S.-backed tyrants, dramatically strengthening the military prowess of despots who happen to be some of the Clinton Foundation's most generous donors. So, it goes on to talk about a whole lot. And there's lots of links. So definitely an article worth checking out. If you want to also check out the piece that I did last week, it's in the archives of the podcast. But yeah, you know, Trump, what I hear people saying is the way he talks and whatnot. Yeah, you know, okay. Yeah. Him taking out a full page ad in New York paper, you know, talking about the Central Park Five that many people depicted as a racist attack on those five black teenagers who we know were eventually, years, decades later, exonerated of the crime against that Central Park jogger, a white woman who was raped. But other than that, man, I really can't say that Donald Trump has blood on his hands, certainly not to the level of Hillary Clinton, for those that know Hillary Clinton. So I just view her as far, far more dangerous, man. She's more of a right winger than Donald Trump is, in my opinion. We really don't know who Trump is, all right? He has admitted to putting on an act, you know, to bring new people into the voting process and to, you know, fuel his campaign. and what have you, and saying, you know, once he pivots to the general election, he'll be more quote unquote presidential, whatever that's supposed to mean and what have you. You know, but Hillary Clinton, you know, this woman is way, 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 way more dangerous than, and Donald Trump has far more blood on her hands. And, you know, people want to try to insult our intelligence and say, look, I wouldn't recommend anybody supporting either candidate. All right. Both of them would be a danger, I feel, to non-white people all over the planet. I know Donald Trump supports modern day 21st century slavery, as does Hillary Clinton, regardless of what she's saying in 2016. It's about what she has done since her days going back as first lady as Arkansas. So, you know, that's not the point. But the point is one, most likely one or two of these people are going to be the CEO of America. Therefore, there's going to be things that are going to occur that's going to affect you whether you engage in politics or not. All right, you live behind enemy lines, okay? Anything that happens behind these enemy lines, you are a potential victim. Any white supremacist codes that they pass or whatnot, anything, we talk about all areas of people activity. Well, laws govern all those areas, so, you know, but you know, Hillary Clinton's people, unfortunately, a whole lot of black people, they just don't know the real Hillary Clinton. And that's because of a lack of independent black radio like you're listening to on this station here, like, you know, a few terrestrial stations that are becoming almost extinct. You know, WVON is one, WCLM out of Virginia, WURD out of Philadelphia. You know, those stations are far and few in between. This was done on purpose, 1996 Telecommunications Act. And so that is why many of our people don't have the right information, and they appear to be foolishly voting for the racist white supremacist Hillary Clinton. And they think anything you tell them about her is, oh, that's just right wing conspiracies or whatnot. It's cause of the mass media that they are programmed with. All right. So, but there was one young black woman who was on CNN the other night, who I think did an excellent job in showing that people cannot get one over on you, so to speak, or they can't play you for stupid if you are informed. And you can flip the script easily, and then they are exposed as either being stupid or being dishonest and being liars. But you got to have the right information. And this young black woman, Yane Nago, I can't pronounce her name. It looks like I'm sure it's an African name. I think it's a Nigerian name. I'm not sure of that. But she was on CNN. Now Hillary Clinton, she's apparently a Bernie Sanders. She likes his platform and the issues that he's speaking to versus Hillary Clinton. And she was on CNN with a Clinton operative, somebody works for the Clinton staff. And this young black woman was just very impressive about her knowledge on Hillary Clinton. So let's go ahead and get at a listen.
It's virtually impossible for Senator Sanders to win the nomination. So why is it Bernie or bust for you?
You know, a lot of people, they perceive the Bernie or bust movement as being something that's almost like a temper tantrum for people who support Bernie. And I think it's really important for people to understand that Bernie or bust is really a representation of how we feel about Hillary Clinton. We don't like Hillary Clinton. We can't support her.
So, Yanni, under no circumstances would you vote for Hillary Clinton?
I'm definitely not going to vote for her.
So, Emily, you're a Democratic strategist. You're a Clinton supporter. So convince Yanni she's wrong.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry to hear that. And I do think there are a lot of people that are open to supporting Hillary. Then really, the difference between the candidates has always really been in degree and not in kind. Look, there's no question that Sanders brought forward a lot of issues that really tapped into what a lot of people are feeling in this country right now and want to be talking about: income inequality, affordable college. He talked about free college. He talks about affordable college, money in politics. But the reality is that these are issues that she actually had in her platform, have always been a part of her platform, and she talks about increasingly more. He did put a real spotlight on them. He talks about them in very simplistic terms. And so I think it has forced her and her campaign to talk about them much more broadly and put them more front and center. But look, this general election is going to be about moving forward.
Because I want to see if any of that makes sense to Yanni. So when you hear Emily say those things, what do you think, Yanni?
Well, there are a few things I think. I think, first of all, that Hillary Clinton says things that aren't always what she means and aren't what she believes in. And she's demonstrated that, and one of the clearest ways that she's demonstrated that was in 2008 when she was running against then-Senator Obama for president, and she claimed that she was going to, that she was against the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, and that she was going to be basically lobbying against that, and that's what she said publicly during her campaigning. But when her emails came out, we saw that what she was actually doing behind the scenes, out of the public eye, was actually lobbying for that exact agreement. So that's evidence for us that what Hillary Clinton says in order to win the election doesn't really have anything to do with what it is that she's going to actually do if she becomes the president. And so whatever she's talking about on her platform, I just don't trust her. And while I agree that there are a lot of things...
I think you've hit the nail on the head. You just don't trust her. And Emily, Mrs. Clinton does have a trust issue. So what can you say to voters like Yanni to say, yes, you can now trust Hillary Clinton. She means what she says.
Yeah, that is clearly her highest vulnerability. That is something that we do see. That we do see pervasive, and this has been a theme of media attacks on her for the last 20 years. Look, we forget the fact that most politicians come into the main stage at the same time to America. Maybe their state knows them, maybe their district knows them, but people generally get to know them all at the same time. That is not the case with Clinton, and there have always been these attacks on her for whatever reason. But I think that as we get more into her, you know, her history, her commitment, that we see that she actually always has been committed to fighting for people that don't have a voice.
Well,
it has always been there in her public service.
Yanni, go ahead.
It's her history that actually... It's not just the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. It's what the State Department did under her leadership going into Haiti, and when they wanted to raise the minimum wage for the Haitians from 24 cents an hour to 61 cents an hour, they negotiated it down to 31 cents an hour. It's the regime change in Honduras and all of the people who are dying as a result of Clinton's influence in Honduras after they had their first democratic election. It's the mistake of the Iraq War. It's the mistake of Libya. It's her history that causes us questions, and so now she's saying new things, and she's saying new things that are popular. Suddenly she realizes that the importance of Black Lives Matter because of the Black Lives Matter movement, and these things don't seem genuine. They seem like what she needs to say in order to get elected. We don't trust what she says, and we don't like what she's done. And so for those combined reasons, we won't vote for Hillary Clinton.
Okay, last word, Emily.
Look, I think that people read into what they believe what they want to believe, right? Like, you can discount pieces of past if you don't think they fit with a current narrative. I think there is a lot to be said for somebody who can learn from their past mistakes and say, look, we tried it. It didn't work. We're moving forward with something that does work. That is what we want in a leader. That is what we want with the President of the United States. And I don't think that we're seeing that, honestly, across the board in any other of the candidates.
All right. I have to leave it there.
What I want in a leader is a person who has foresight. I want a leader who has foresight, who has the ability to know in 1994 that there are issues with the crime bill, not to look back after thousands of lives have been destroyed and families have been destroyed and say, ooh, I made a mistake. I want somebody who has foresight to say, no, I'm not going to vote for the Iraq War because that's wrong. Not somebody who's going to later on say, oops, that was a mistake. I don't think our country can afford the mistakes that come with hindsight. We want somebody who has the foresight to make the right decisions in the beginning.
Okay, I have to leave it there, Yanni. I appreciate your passion. Yanni Indigo, Emily Tisch Sussman.
Black Talk Radio News, Scotty Reed in for this broadcast. See, I'll tell you, man, these people that be practicing racism, her passion, you hear the CNN host, oh, I respect your passion, to make it seem like she was being emotional. That's usually what the word passion is associated with, emotion. you know, oh, you're being emotional and you're not thinking about these things rationally. That woman, Yanni, articulated her position with the utmost clarity. Wasn't no emotional. She was naming off the facts, and then you had the Clinton surrogate telling lies and suggesting that, oh, these things aren't true, that Hillary Clinton didn't support the Honduras coup that removed its first democratically elected president, which then led to tremendous violence and political assassinations. And she said it was open for business. Like, it's not true that she went in there and interfered in the internal negotiations in Haiti where workers were fighting for what, 61 cents an hour? Oh, but Hillary Clinton went in there and negotiated it down to 31 cents an hour. Sounds similar to her thing with here in the United States with the minimum wage. Oh, I don't support $15 an hour. I you know, let's go for 12. You know, always on the side of business, always on the side of the exploiters and what have you, as if, you know, they didn't use these Islamic proxies to overthrow Libya, to take over its oil and its gold and what have you, other natural resources, to prevent them from using their resources along with other African nations to create a African currency backed by the gold dinar. You know, saying, oh, people can believe what they want to believe. Oh, these are facts. These come from this woman's email. These people are the most that support Hillary Clinton. All they do is lie, just like her. All she does is lie. And I'm telling you, people, this woman has both hands dripping with blood. And if this becomes the next CEO of USA Inc., millions and millions of more people we know will suffer based on her track record. Donald Trump, very scary dude, but his hands ain't dripping with blood like hers. Still a very bad dude. Again, supporter of modern slavery, slave catching, and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, this is first time in U.S. history where you got two nominees from the two major corrupt parties who are the most disliked in history. Most disliked in history. You got Hillary Clinton under a criminal investigation. Man, don't get me started on this wench. But, you know, when you are informed, you can hold your own against these white supremacist propaganda masters and what have you. But, you know, pay attention how they try to take shots at you and discredit what you're saying. Like she was being emotional. She wasn't emotional. Very coherent. Very intelligent as she articulated the points of why Hillary is a no-go for her, regardless of who else may become CEO. All right, last thing that I want to share, I'm a little bit over today. Got a couple of more stories to share. Hillary Clinton, going back to, well, let's say the Democratic primary election in New York as well as Arizona. Lots of voting fraud took place, lots of voter disenfranchisement. Again, the votes didn't matter. I don't think they would go to the lengths that they go at to disenfranchise people and to come up with software that allows them to flip votes and stuff. But that is what's being alleged in what happened in New York. It was a little different in Arizona. In Arizona, they purposely only opened up a couple of polling places in the, you know, predominantly non-white areas of Tucson and you know, mostly it was in Tucson where they had the highest population of non-white people. But in New York, and I believe I did report on this, there were reports of vote flipping coming out. Signs of 2000 of electronic voting in 2000 where votes were being flipped for George Bush. You know, if you voted for Nader or if you voted for Gore, there were reports of on these electronic machines, and I saw it because it happened to me here in North Carolina where the votes were flipped for George Bush. All right. And they're saying that that's going on here in New York. And I suspect that it will happen in the general election, especially if Hillary Clinton escapes indictment, escapes prosecution, ends up with the in the general election facing off against Donald Trump. I think, you know, that we're going to see more shenanigans like we saw in the year 2000 with electronic voting. And I just don't understand why anybody in any county would even tolerate these electronic diebold voting machines that don't have any kind of paper trail whatsoever. We in North Carolina, because there were issues, the citizens made it known that we didn't want these. Now we have paper ballots that you know, we fill out, and then those are counted electronically, but the paper ballots are stored so that you have a hard count in case there's a dispute or any kind of allegations of shenanigans. But it's no more those diebold touchscreen voting machines, no more of that. But they apparently, New York, which I have read, has some of the worst election laws and voter disenfranchisement in the entire United States. Worse than Alabama, worse than Mississippi, worse than North Carolina, worse than South Carolina, worse than Florida, right there in the north, in New York City, which is supposed to be so enlightened and what have you. So let's listen to this clip of this New York voter describing the black box voting theft there in the state of New York. All right, here we go.
These are the five boroughs: Staten Island results, Manhattan results, Bronx, Brooklyn, Queens. All of these votes are placed in a black box. This black box is an unaccountable, untestable, privately run software from the two companies that you have hired to count our votes. So when the votes come out of this black box, they do not reflect the New York City or the national votes. In 22 primaries, the votes have shifted in 20 of them. The exit polling data in New York State shifted 12%. A shift of 2% is fraud, according to the U.S. State Department. So that's what we've seen across the country.
One minute left.
Richard Charnin, a mathematician, has been studying election data for years.
Can you speak directly into the mic? We can hear you.
Can you hear me? I'm glad you can hear me.
I'll cut it off.
So only the developers can see the software. Only the hired contractors can see the software. It's a completely untransparent process. This software is stealing votes. I have 30 seconds. All I can say is this country can't survive much more of your kind of democracy. Thank you.
All right. So, you know, one of the things that we found out from Hillary Clinton's mishandling of classified emails and totally trying to circumvent the State Department's email system or the federal government's email system by setting up a private server in her basement. One of the things that we have found out, among other things, is that she communicates frequently with the Bush family, members of the Bush family. And even now, she is openly courting. This woman is openly courting right-wing financers of Republican elections, going after the people who donated $142 million to Jeb Bush's failed campaign on the Republican side. She's openly going after them. But what I'm saying is that the Clinton family and the Bush family has been close, especially after Bill Clinton's election and what have you. And so here we know from Hillary Clinton's email that they talk to each other personally, you know, and what have you. So I'm wondering if the Bush family hooked up the Clintons with whoever they use to steal votes these different businesses that provide this voting software and pointing out which, you know, counties where the people in charge are corruptible and you can, you know, steal some elections here or there and what have you. I wonder if that's what their communications are about, if they sit back and laugh and about how, you know, they're rigging elections and what have you. So I expect, you know, if Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, that we'll see more of this during the general election. The most powerful, most dangerous, most evil, racist white supremacists on the planet want Hillary Clinton in there, and they will do everything possible to get her in there if that means stealing another election. All right, last story I want to share with you. You got black Mexicans in Mexico. That's their nationality. Mexicans, they're black, identify as black. They're descendants of enslaved Africans and what have you, have their own unique history down there. And they are facing racism and discrimination primarily from the European or the descendants of the European Spanish that colonized that part of the world. It also, what they're fighting for is official recognition from the government of Mexico, like in a census or what have you. They don't count them as a distinct group of people, as an indigenous people, because one of the things they're saying, the Mexican government is saying, because they don't have their own indigenous language, because they speak Spanish like everybody else. But they, I mean, when you think about the reason that African so-called Americans don't speak their native tongues, it's because it was stolen from us. It was stolen. All right. You know, Malcolm X talked about it. Stripped you of your religion, stripped you of your God, stripped you of your, you know, native tongues and what have you. And so obviously these Afro-Mexicans are victims of that. So, you know, this whole thing about, oh, well, you have to speak a certain language. You got to have your own indigenous language to be recognized as a people is absurd. It's absurd. But also interesting to me is, you know, the black community indeed is global. They are on every part of the continent. And we don't all look the same. We don't all have, you know, the same type of hair, even the same levels of melanation, you know, different variations that might have to do with climate and developing in different parts of the world. But they are black, and these people are identifying as black, and they say they are suffering, you know, racism and from the Mexican government. And they are saying that, you know, they're warning that the black community may end up emulating the indigenous uprisings in Chiapas in the 1990s, known as the Zapatistas. Okay, so I had to go back to the 1990s and, you know, to get background information on that uprising of non-white people against the Europeans in control of Mexico. So far, the black communities have endured discrimination, and they have stuck to legal avenues, which they have now exhausted. And this is from an article from BBC.com, and these are the words of Humberto Herbert Silva Silva, a self-identified black Mexican. He said, with the Zapatistas, the indigenous rose up, and it was an armed uprising to claim their rights. And, well, our community is thinking the same. It's thinking in the distant future to rise up, too, he says. It may be the only way to get the rights we're entitled to. It can't be right that the Constitution of our country doesn't recognize us. There's a big gap between what the politicians say and what they do. We'll have to take action to give them a warning. All right. So if you want to check that out, go check out that article on the BBC, which is linked up for you. All right. That concludes today's broadcast of Black Talk Radio News. I will be back on air tomorrow with another broadcast at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on Black Talk Radio Network, New Black Media. for the new millennium. Coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, continuing live streaming, will be the Tando Show today on this Monday, May the 9th. Recognize the fact if, you know, the whole entire planet is a battlefield. There's a lot of injustice in the world, a lot of racism, a lot of classism, just a whole lot of injustice that's going on. And the only way that we can bring an end to it is if we have more people who are willing to sacrifice all in the name of bringing about a system based on justice, as opposed to the number of people who want to maintain a system of injustice. It's not going to end itself. It's going to take individuals. It's going to take groups. It's going to take a collective to finally end the system of global slavery that has produced racism and white supremacy. But in the meantime, you know, you also have to be very careful behind these enemy lines so that you don't make yourself an easy mark, that you don't needlessly you know, end up on a prison plantation working for some other man or woman's profit. All right. So don't do stupid stuff, man. Don't engage in you know, ignorant things that are going to attract the attentions of the slave catchers. And, you know, they got codes on the book that'll put you in prison. So I understand people needing to break certain laws for survival. But if you are out there trying to survive, then, you know, you need to be smart about how you handle your business out there or your hustle out there on the street. But most of all, you should make sure that what you engage in is not harming people. And then you're just a problem on top of the problems we already got. So with that said, peace and blessings to all. Again, Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. If you like the work of this network, the work of Black Talk Media Project, the North Carolina-based nonprofit, then by all means, make a financial contribution today, because we are not going to replace all of the digital black radio stations that we have lost over the decades, you know, unless we build it. Nobody else is going to build it. Nobody else is going to fund it. Nobody else is going to do the work. So we would appreciate any contributions towards that end. Peace and blessings to all.